As GenAI reshapes industries, understanding and leveraging its capabilities is no longer an option, it's a necessity. And that's exactly why at Hatchworks, we developed our GenAI Innovation Workshop. In this workshop, we immerse you into a full day of learning, hands-on ideation, and building. We hit foundational concepts and show you how they relate to your domain. Then we develop actual use cases for your business and your industry. And we even build a custom GPT based on the use cases we define. Check out the link in the show notes or visit Hatchworks.com to get started today. Welcome to Built Right, a podcast by Hatchworks where we help you learn how to build the right digital product the right way. In this season, we're going all in on generative AI with guests ranging from international AI speakers, founders of GenAI products, experts in specific domains of GenAI, and leaders across industries. We're here to help you figure out how to take advantage of this new emerging technology so you can win in the market. So whether you're an AI techie or just AI curious, we got you covered. Let's get into it. Welcome, Built Right listeners. I don't think I've been more excited for an episode than I am right now. Today, we're joined by Alexander De Ritter, an entrepreneur, technologist, visionary focused on leveraging AI to transform business. He's currently the co-founder and CTO, of SmithOS. And today we're diving into the concept that Alexander calls AI orchestration. And we're going to get into the future of AI agents. And I can't underscore like how big of a shift this is going to be. And Alexander does probably one of the best jobs of conveying this future. But welcome to the show, Alexander.
So happy to be here. Thank you, Matt.
Yeah, excited to get into this. And this is one of those, like, if you're listening, make sure you have a notepad ready or, you know, don't be driving and taking notes, but there's so many good nuggets that we're going to get into. But Alexander, before we get into this AI orchestration and the whole AI agents, give me like the high level background of yourself that kind of got you to where you are. Yeah. Just so people have context of your background from a CTO and founding perspective.
I had a big imagination, big creativity, big love for people and communicating with them. And I just see technology as like an art canvas. So naturally, I started working at a marketing company and started using technology in the early 2000s to start doing incredible campaigns, like working with some of the most amazing brands. You know, imagine in the year 2004, having like an office with like ping pong tables and poofy bags and everything. And like, it's all about the creativity. It's all about reaching customers and then using technology to like reach them. Right. So I've always been very driven. I've always loved people and I've always loved technology, code, the web as kind of my art of choice. And then it was around 2008, I encountered someone. I moved to the United States in 2006, got married, all that. Then in 2008, I got an opportunity to start working for a company in Houston, Texas that had like, that gave me an opportunity to work on machine learning projects with computer vision. To be honest, I don't think they asked me to do it. I just pitched it so heavily because I wanted to do it. And I thought that was the solution. I ended up having a team of researchers that I hired and elevated and built and architected. And we did amazing things. And then in 2012, like deep learning became a thing because NVIDIA had like enabled GPUs to like train neural networks on it and kind of changed the landscape of the market. But I was so in tune with the whole internet marketing scene as well. I realized that Google was going to use these neural nets to change the content marketing game. So I started building technology, which is patented, around semantic embeddings and optimizing content for a semantic search engine. As Google was developing their rank brain, I was developing the optimization AI to rank for rank brain, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then that turned into a large agency, which we exited from in 2021, November. So not too long ago, and a little over 2 years. And then out of that, we spun out an AI department and continue to developing AI technology. Now, the market has changed a lot since then. But you know, I was working with transformer architectures before GPT-2, right? So and then ML solutions in 2008. But all in all, I'm typically like a person who likes to see where things are going. I like to be a visionary, and I love to be creative with code and people.
Yeah. And that's interesting. So you are ahead of the curve in terms of everything going on today. You know, it really kind of popped. If you think about it, last year, you were way before this. And this is where I want to kind of transition us to the concept of AI orchestration. Take us through this, because I think this is a foundational piece of the future that I don't think many people are connecting from today. It's like ChatGPT. Oh, cool. I can go do these cool kind of magic tricks, like write an email and, you know, create a social post. A lot of people aren't connecting it to where this is really going to go in the future and why.
Yeah. So the fundamental thing I challenge people on thinking through and thinking differently about things is how you view the web as essentially the artificial general intelligence, not the AI model. So I see the AI model as the orchestrator or the coordinator of the web. And with the web, I mean the full web, everything, all the information, all of the APIs, all of the things that connect us into software and the real world. I'm talking about a living, breathing organism where new capabilities are constantly added in the form of new domains and new APIs, where existing ones get better, evolve, so to speak, and where the weak just prune out and just disappear. So the web is like a living, breathing organism that is just like untapped or unorchestrated. And we focus a lot of our energy just looking at the most capable model and saying, hey, how awesome is this? But some of the biggest economic gains are not found in the most capable models. They're found in less capable models that are way more energy efficient, cost efficient, speed efficient. Like, for example, let's say I wanted to have an agent that made phone calls on your behalf, right? And imagine that it had to like process for 5 seconds and then answer. That would be like an awkward conversation. It wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. Even if the model is very capable and gives great answers, nobody wants to wait 5 seconds, right? And then even if you get to an AI that can do it kind of in real-time speed, kind of where you want to be, well, then is it still cost efficient at scale if everybody wants to have access to that at the same time? Like, what is the environmental impact? What is the cost impact? And so forth and so on. Like, this kind of like same questions, like what's the environmental cost of lithium batteries on electric cars? Are you really polluting less by driving an electric car? Yes, after you drove it for X amount of miles, at which your batteries degrade and you need to replace them. So it's more complex than meets the eye. But the fundamental misconception is this. I do not believe that you can build just one very, very large, very, very smart model that does everything, because it excludes what happens in real time. It excludes the entire web and universe of information. And the only way that you can tap into it is by orchestration, by basically tapping into collective consciousness of a living, breathing web 3.0.
Yeah, and this orchestration, and back on the other point, though, it's almost like you're having to optimize for the outcome you're looking to achieve and reducing, doing it in the most energy efficient way. And I don't know if I saw this yesterday, and it's been blowing up, and this will release at a later date. But did you see what's going on with Grok? Not Elon Musk Grok, but the
Grok with a Q. Grok with a Q, yes.
Like 500 tokens per second. I was playing with it this morning. I was getting like... Yeah. 300 tokens per second. And I did like, it did a side-by-side to ChatGPT, and it's insane.
So install a spam filter on your phone, because this is going to enable that phone call spam with AI. in real time. Mm-hmm. That's what this does. This is Together AI was one of the faster ones before and did around, I think in their record, like their marketing claims, they would say 70 tokens per second with Llama 2. You know, Grok with a Q is pushing 400. So 400 plus. So it's a dramatic uptick. Now, the mixed RAL models are more significant at this time because Llama 2 is kind of outdated by now, unless you run a fine-tuned model. Llama 3 is on the horizon. But even in mixed RAL, the mixture of experts model that essentially beats ChatGPT 3.5. So when it was released first, like, is it like a year ago and a little bit? And it's like,
you can keep up now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it feels like forever. And it's only been like 14 months, something like that. So mixed RAL is really, really capable and not as capable as GPT-4, obviously, or 4.5, but more capable than 3.5, especially when it came out last year. It's fully open source, and it doesn't run as fast as Llama 2, but it's still like 5x faster than anything out there. And then the prices are like 7 times more affordable. Anyway, this is exciting.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, and this is something that we're still not appreciating enough, right? We're all looking like technology, 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 amazing, amazing. However, you know how resource efficient human beings are?
Oh, it's insane. Yeah, I can run off a piece of pizza, right?
Yeah, a slice of pizza, and you can go for hours at high cognitive abilities, right? And it's like for all of the capabilities of like AI models, they don't even come close yet to a human in general intelligence. And then the ones that will one day might need like a supercomputer of like $1 million worth of chips. You might argue it costs more to raise a kid nowadays than to buy NVIDIA chips, but.
right, yeah, it's insane. But I want to pause here. Like, this is such a big component that I want to make sure the audience understands. And I think you gave a good analogy when we chatted last time. Trying to apply like this overarching huge model to everything, it's like taking a bazooka to kill a weed. Yes, you'll kill the weed, but you'll probably blow up your whole yard in the process. And as this starts to evolve and you're starting to apply it to real use cases, starting to integrate it with your business, this is where the concept of leveraging those open source models, leveraging the smaller ones that, to your point, are more energy efficient, are going to become critical. So as a business leader, you need to start to comprehend this as you start to make your way through this kind of AI journey that you're taking your company on.
Yeah. And it's like even the human brain is optimized in such a way, right? You've got like the limbic system that handles like the majority of processes. And then you've got the cortex and the other parts that are handling like higher reasoning and more advanced reasoning. So what the brain is really is like an orchestration machine. And your hands are like APIs that it controls with the neural system. It tells the arms what to do, but it does not rely on the big brain for everything. So really your brain is an architecture of orchestration. And then a human by themselves is not going to create civilization. To create civilization, you need collaboration, specialization. Those specialization is like fine-tuned models or purpose-built models. And so to have real impact in the modern complex society, even orchestration is not sufficient. You need collaboration on top of it. So with SmithOS, Smith with a Y, we're creating networks of collaborative orchestrating agents. Somebody saw my demo and they went on LinkedIn and turned it into like armies of agents. It was like, oh dear, movie incoming. Right. It's like, yeah, everybody gets it, but it also sounds a little bit scary when you say army. I more think of it like a teammate or like your cheerleaders or supporters rather than like army. But yeah, it's everything in technology, it's how you use it for good or bad. You know, you can say that about a lot of things.
Yeah, and SmithOS, like you mentioned, that's the problem y'all are trying to tackle, is this orchestration component. Is that's the tough part today, is I go use ChatGPT. It doesn't have context for my business, all my data, the other systems that I use. You know, I work in, pick your tool, ClickUp, Notion, HubSpot, Salesforce. Yeah. They may have a great AI solution within that, but it only goes as far as the solution. And this is the concept of orchestration that is going to start to manifest, is when these things start to connect together. Then you get to that, to what you're just talking about, AI agents that can do things autonomously, asynchronously, of like a human actually being involved in the process, yeah. Right?
So I'd like to challenge like the audience, if you're like thinking, you're listening to this, and this is like a, have you ever seen like America Talent and they interact with the audience and so yeah. forth and do like a live yeah. experiment thing? It's kind of like this, okay? I want, no matter who's watching or listening or whatnot, think about your job. Think about an email comes in, somebody asks you to do something, right? Within what your job description is. I would argue that it is a combination, that it can be done with a combination of a proven process, knowledge or data, the right mm-hmm. knowledge or data, the right access to tools where that data resides or where you need to do some action in, and using intelligence to like interpret the request, interpret the data, and so forth and so on. So like, again, like, a process or workflow, the right knowledge, access to operate the tools necessary for the job, and applying intelligence, right? I would argue that anything you can come up with is a combination of those four things in terms of executing it. For the first time in human history, we can do those four things with AI agents. So any process you can think of that uses any piece of data, connects to any tool, and has the AI models to power the intelligence, right? You can create these automations that previously were not possible. Moreover, you can create these agents that are specialists, but also know how to talk to each other and to humans.
Yeah.
So they can have a conversation with each other. It's like, hey, we need to create a new blog article. Is there somebody who can research? Oh, yeah, I can do that. You know? So, and then to the writer and the editor and the publisher. And before you know it, you're just sitting in your sofa and you're like, hey, I need 50 more articles on my site. It needs to be about this and so forth. Make sure you show expertise. And your team is like, on it. I'm off to work.
And your team being, that's the piece there. The team is the AI agents. And that's the interesting yeah. thing. It's the interaction there.
Yeah.
And I've even started to do this with just the app with ChatGPT, where you start conversationally talking to it. And it has a different vibe and feel, even though contextually it's the same information, yeah. but it has a different feel to it. And like you get to the Sam Altman, the one person, $1 billion company. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. That's insane. But well, what people are missing is he would deploy.
I've been saying three people, yeah. $1 trillion company for more than a year. So Sam
there you
Altman.
Go. Okay, so you predated Sam Altman there. But that's the thing that people miss, is it's not just like one person just frantically doing all the things. No, they have yeah. deployed, employed AI agents to help execute the task.
We're underestimating collective consciousness. We're overestimating our own ability to do stuff, and we're underestimating what a group of people can accomplish with different skill sets yeah. by collaborating. The internet yeah. is the ultimate thing that can collaborate. And AI is the thing that can orchestrate the internet. And AGI will come from orchestrating everything. I'm talking about embodied robots and grass mowing robots and yeah. the websites that do design, and websites that do taxes, and websites that offer up knowledge and data structures and workflow processes that are proven. The AI is the orchestrator that enables the agents, that enables the action in the real world and in the virtual world and in the metaverse. We are going to have these personal assistants that we're going to end up having friendship with. Like they're actually going to, like, we're all going to end up like these. We're just in the early days now, right? Everybody's laughing at the bulkiness of like the Apple Vision. But, you know, 10 years from now, we have like normal looking transparent glasses that that can augment reality, and we can see our digital colleagues physically. We can like see them with our eyes. We can talk to them. They can walk around. They understand the objects around us. They can sit in a team. You can have a whiteboard session. But if you want to buy a new Toyota, you're going to talk to a Toyota salesperson that is actually an AI agent that can give you a tour of the car right then, right there. And this is how brands will interact with the world. So we're going to do this transition from, like, I'm telling you, like, our kids and our grandkids are going to look back at how we used to surf the web and click on links to try and find information, like some kind of, like, we're looking back at, like, punch cards and floppy disks.
Yeah. We're using an abacus to do math. Maybe it's even that. And the funny thing is, like, we've been building this internet for how long now, you know, since the very early days. I don't think, to your point, we realized what we were actually building, right? Yeah, that is the kind of the collective consciousness there that can be leveraged in this whole new way.
It's like Bill Gates going on, I don't know, Letterman or something, trying to explain the internet.
Back in the day. Sometimes.
Yeah, it's like,
yes.
Like, so what is the internet and why do I need it? I got radio for that. But the world is changing, and we have to adapt as businesses, entrepreneurs, employees, workers, all of that. We have to adapt. So if you're an employee, you have to learn how to master AI, pick up agent engineering as a skill. If you're a business, you know, you need to compete in a marketplace. So you need to increase your efficiency. So that means what? You need to start having AI colleagues in here, blend it in. The easy way to get started is get like Microsoft Copilot for Teams, or get ChatGPT for Teams, and start creating custom GPTs. It's like super easy. And start with like uploading your company manual, and then say you are company Acme Incorporated HR policy, and you can answer questions about the company policy on whatever. And then deploy it as a custom GPT for your entire company to be able to access. At any time they have any question, they have a piece of text and they want to be like, does this comply with company policy? They just go at Acme policy and please review this. And it will tell you if it's in or out. It's amazing. So start there. Then once you get like used to that, then start expanding from it and be like, okay, what processes do we do often enough where adding AI agents makes sense? It's like you won't hire, and like the people behind Basecamp, they wrote a book. I forgot the name of the book, but
they have a few good ones. Yeah,
they have a slogan in there. It says, "Hire when it hurts."
Yep.
Hire when it hurts. Like
is that the one you're thinking of?
Yes.
Rework. Yeah, that's a good one.
Rework. Yeah, it's like I didn't want to confuse it with WeWork and make myself a fool on a recorded podcast. So I didn't say it if I wasn't sure. But the quote in it is hire when it hurts. And so think of your business and think where your hurt is, because you can now hire AI agents to come help you. Now, there's not like a universal marketplace where you can just hire Matt Page to come and help you with your business problem, right? That day will come, but it's not there yet. In the meantime, it's your process, your data, your tools, and your intellect on how you want to all put it together that will enable you to put these automations to work. So you need an easy way to create, build, maintain, test, debug, all of that, your agents. When we looked at that in March of last year, we said the world will need this, an ability to quickly create agents without any of the headaches of code and quickly solve these problems. We started building SmithOS. So SmithOS is something that you can think of it like instead of coding your website with assembly, mm-hmm. code it in like JavaScript or something, right? So, or HTML markup. It's a way to make everything a lot easier. Drag and drop, no code, and you can build your custom integration. So if you're a business, start simple, then start making more advanced agents and gradually introduce them to your team, increasing the productivity of your team 10x. And if you're a SaaS company or brand, you're going to have to, I'm going to say this, and I said it for many, many years already, but your topical authority is your biggest asset, your brand recognition and value. In the future marketplace, when somebody needs, I don't know, to book a hotel room, and they have a personal AI assistant that's their personal shopper, and you say, I need to book a hotel room, why would that personal shopper AI assistant use your company?
Yeah.
That right there is the SEO of the future. And it is the single most important thing you can do long-term for your business for longevity. Because if the AI assistant does not end up recommending your service, you are gonzo.
Yeah.
And the way you do that today is by making sure you're so well known for one thing. Don't try to be everything anymore. The orchestrated web will swallow you whole and you become nothing. If you are a company today, make sure that you become the undisputed category king for that one thing. If you do that, it's going to be like printing money in your sleep 5 years from now, because you will then be able to shift into a brand agent that will be able to assist the personal assistant of customers. But the only way they're going to pick that brand agent, they're going to talk to yours, is based on certain future ranking factors, which the one of the most important one will be that topical authority, that thing that also today helps your SEO, that helps you rank in Google, your reputation, the quality of your content, the quality of your product, the way that people reference you online. Like, your reputation is everything in this new economy. So if you're in that boat, really, really invest in becoming known for one thing and be the best at it.
Yeah. And so I want to shift into what is going to happen to the market more broadly when we think of SaaS versus like service-based companies. I've been thinking, toying around this idea in my head. You think of this concept of like labor arbitrage. Like, back in the day, you had offshore, right? You lower cost of living. There was an arbitrage opportunity there. Same thing with like nearshore. We have a big nearshore business. Same kind of concept there. There's this new labor arbitrage opportunity with AI agents and those that do leverage and deploy them versus those that don't. But that's something that's been playing around in my head, that I think that's where the haves and have nots will start. It's those that start to leverage it. But
very smart.
And we can go back to that some, but the thing that got me really interested when we were chatting before was the idea of SaaS as it is today and how it will be impacted with this new future. And same thing with service businesses, because we're a service business at Hatchworks. We do custom software development. We're leaning heavily into Gen AI, but our problem is scale. We have a very linear scale. As we grow, it's based on people. Versus SaaS, it's like I build the thing once and I can sell it a bunch of times, right? Mm-hmm. So what happens to that in the future?
Yeah, so we had everyone in the same town, then everybody in the same country, then everybody in the same country and the country next to you, maybe the same time zone, then going overseas, then COVID, everybody remote, everyone working from home with inflection points like broadband internet access for everyone, high quality compute, video conferencing, all of that contributed to that. The next stage in that journey of the evolving workspace is, I call it the great reshoring. So AI agents allow you to reshore a lot of your less complex mundane work back in-house in the form of AI colleagues. And for staffing companies and the haves and have-nots and so forth, traditionally, you know, you bring in resources that you have trained on a certain skill that is a gap in the market, and you're like, oh, you're lacking Salesforce engineers, so here you go, I've got them. You're lacking this engineer, oh, I got them. The thing that everybody needs, like going forward, is AI engineers and AI agent engineers, right? So like learn to use Smith, train your team on it, place them in companies, sell revolutions, right? That is definitely a huge opportunity. Like the hottest job, you know, you could have in the past is like developer. Well, guess what? Gemini 1.5, 10 million token window, can read all of your code. Insane. Those models get better. And, you know, do I really need like as many developers as before? But you know who I do need? I need those agent engineers. And a lot of the developers can be like, just like take a little bit of time and upskill, like just like learning a new Angular or something, right? See what the code update, and it's like, boom, now they're agent engineers. So now these developers can like shift their understanding and capabilities in businesses. Smart agencies leverage that, put it in there, and like they can fill that, they can fill that void. Now on to the, what is happening with SaaS and service businesses is the capital flows of money is rewarding efficiency and scale. So if you're a VC and you want to invest in a company, well, you like companies that have predictable profit margins, don't suffer from scaling problems. Like if tomorrow a million more customers signed up, your process is already established and can scale. Software had all those businesses for many years. That's why if you look at the S&P 500 and you look at, you exclude tech companies, the growth has been pretty flat, but you look at tech companies and the growth has been massive because the market is rewarding efficiency. That's what capitalism is for, right? If it doesn't do that, then there's too many hands on the scale. But the benefits of SaaS are under attack because every new AI model that comes out, every update is threatening the traditional SaaS model. Like, for example, just like, and I've been saying this for a while, like, you can't force me, maybe at gunpoint, because I value my life more, but I would never invest in a company like Runway ML. I love that company and what they've done with video generation for AI. I love it. But you also know it's only a matter of time before the next version of GPT or Google will just do that better. And it's just a game you can't win unless you're, unless you have like, you know, you can ask for $7 trillion or something. You won't win that. So it makes no sense.
As of this recording, Sora came out last week, right? So that's like the example right there. Sora came out and it's like Runway is probably just, you know, well, they're shaking in their boots right now. We'll put it that way.
I've been there. I've been one of those companies. I've been disrupted by it and I've learned my lesson. It's not a good space to be in when you're about to be this, when you're one AI update from OpenAI or Google away from being completely irrelevant. And I'm not calling Runway ML irrelevant. They can become a niche software. They can add extra controls, extra like post editing. There's a future for them, but they'll have to specialize away from what they used to do and why they got the big valuation in the first place, because the big models are just on the march, right? So if you're a SaaS company and then, and I'd be a VC and I have to look at you and I have to just think like, okay, in this orchestrated web of collaborative intelligence, collaborative consciousness, where do I still see the need for you? Because I can cobble together these three little pieces and put it together with an orchestration and I do the same thing. I don't have to pay for your overpriced service. That's not a nice position to be in. So VCs are very jittery in the market because of that. Now, on the other hand, traditionally, I would have shied away from service businesses. And why? Well, you know, people get sick, turnover, employees leave, and it's hard to scale people up. However, AI agents solve all that problem because they create repeatable, scalable, predictable revenue at scale. So some of the best VC investments will come from taking like a traditional service business and that's maybe not so efficient, and then applying agents to it and scaling the heck out of it, crushing their competition, and realizing the same kind of returns that traditionally went to software. So I'm very bullish on services business in like the next 5 years. Now, after that, right? After that stage, competition will eventually have caught up. And then all your competitors will also be more efficient with AI agents. What will happen then? Well, then prices will start to come down. But this is something we see with AI now too. Like OpenAI has decreased their prices for their models 3 times in 12 months. The last price cut was just a few weeks ago, 50% cheaper on the input tokens. And so what does that mean? It means that the cost of intelligence and the value of intelligence is becoming eroded, which means ultimately that will translate into what is the cost of operating an agent? It will decrease and so forth. So ultimately, what we have is we have a lot of goods and services becoming so cheap that there's basically no reason why we couldn't offer it to everyone in our country. So for example, we can afford to put roads everywhere. We can afford to provide infrastructure for electricity and internet everywhere, right? So if the cost of healthcare became so affordable because every citizen could have an AI doctor helping them and it's just an AI model, why wouldn't you give healthcare to all your citizens, right? What if you could do the same thing for education? What if you could do the same thing for entertainment and have AI just create endless entertainment? You can give your civilization like Panamitsitkensis, bread and games, and people would have all of their basic essentials covered, which basically leads to a society where we could potentially eradicate poverty if we have the desire for it, right? And so this kind of where this all ends is we're in this transition period. I sometimes call this like the last hurrah of capitalism, right? Before deflationary pressures like bring the cost of everything so low that it's almost impossible for you to get ahead of other people in terms of I own so much more than you, because everything just becomes so much more affordable. If I can spin up a few like agents and with like 2 friends or so, spin up an entire company as the equivalent of like 1,000 workers today in a large company, imagine what I can do. It's just eroding the differences of opportunity between us.
Yeah, the entire economy changes in a big way. And just to back up one of the points you just mentioned, I was watching a talk by Andres Karpathy, one of the founders of OpenAI. He recently left, but what was so interesting to me is he was talking about these like scaling laws that are starting to manifest. And I would almost equate it to like Moore's law back in the day with chips, but he talked about there's two things when you think about it. It's the, I believe it was the number of parameters and the size of the amount of data being trained on. And they're starting to see this pattern that as you increase those, there's no like fall off in terms of improvement in the models. And it gets to the point where intelligence just becomes extremely cheap in a sense, right? Because you can keep scale. That's why you got Sam Altman trying to raise $7 trillion, excuse me, one of the reasons. But I thought that was really interesting in terms of how
there are diminishing returns when you scale. And what's so interesting is like studies have shown that at a certain scale, it doesn't matter whether you have transformer architecture or Mamba architecture or whatever other neural network. Given enough data, the neural network will self-optimize against the data, and you can almost not say which architecture is better. It's almost like it doesn't matter as long as it's able to train on enough data and like encode all that sufficiently over. You can get to that, but there is some diminishing return on that. Now the interesting thing is, I think it's underappreciated. but is definitely 1000% something I'm convinced about. In order to unlock higher levels of AI performance and intelligence, you have to increase the multimodality of the model training data. You have to. There's no other way. For example, you could have a really good impression. I'm giving a real life example. I grew up in Belgium. I watched a lot of movies from the United States. I must have seen movies with New York in it and the Empire State Building and everything a million times.
Yeah.
And then I moved to the United States, and it still took me a few years before I made it to New York for the first time. All grown man in my 30s, first time in New York City. When you go there, it feels surreal because you feel like you know that place, mm-hmm. but it cannot replace the actual being there. There's parameters missing. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is what multimodality does for AI models. So you could train it on text, and based on text descriptions, it can create a picture of the world that approximates the visual understanding of it, but it doesn't fully appreciate the visual space. Training it on images, you can have something like DALL-E, but in order to create something like Sora, you need to train it on video. And to approximate the human experience, you need much more. You need actual robots embodying the physical space and navigating the physical space as humans do to have a real experience and real data that it can learn from. And not only that, humans are way more complex than that. We smell. We smell the beautiful, like spring air, and it impacts our impression. If you're just a camera and a speaker and whatnot, you can never appreciate the same impression a human would have. So you need sensors. You need, you need to simulate the emotions and the hormones and everything to approximate the fullness of human intellect and experience. And so unless we have that, all you are is like you and I meet online, but we've never met in person, right? Mm-hmm. And there's this Netflix show currently ranked number one, Love is Blind. And you see it all the time. Like people are talking to each other, like dating without seeing each other. And they think they fall in love. And then they meet in person. And then there's like a physical response that they couldn't predict because they never met in person. And for some people, it works out. And for other people, it doesn't work out. And this is the same thing for AI, because you can put an AI behind that wall in that show. And the other person might not know that it's not a human being.
Yeah.
Until they have to come face to face with it and then not have any physical reaction at all because it's a piece of metal.
So a couple of things here. A, that's probably the best metaphor you win for season two so far, the love is blind metaphor. But you just kind of expanded my mind a bit too, because when I always thought about modalities, I always went to text, video, audio, just kind of the basic ones. I wasn't even like thinking about the ones around the senses and all of that. And I think that just shows how far we have to go and how early we are on this journey in terms of the potential. But you look just even going from text to video, like look at what Google has in terms of YouTube, in terms of all the video there. It's insane what they're sitting on.
YouTube University, anything like my kid. The other day, my kid brought like, hey, dad, I made your breakfast. I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. It's like 9 years old, super sweet kid. And he's like, yeah, I made you egg souffle. I'm like, I don't even know that word.
Like, wow. He learned it on YouTube.
He found it on YouTube. And he's just like, YouTube University. So you now have AI that can watch entire videos and just learn from you. Imagine an AI trained on the full knowledge, not just on the transcripts of it, but all the visuals and the text, and just watches all the news in real time as it gets posted about every topic in real time, encoder, decoder, architecture in real time. That sounds superhuman, but it still has not had one time feeling its heart beat in its chest. Mm-hmm. It's still lacking modalities, right? So we've got ways to go. And so I believe that in order to unlock those kinds of AIs in the future, we are going to have calculators are super, superhuman. They can calculate way faster than me, way more accurate than me. Calculators and computers are already superhuman, but they're not multimodal. They're not the fullness of human. And then there's the big question at the end of the rainbow, right? What about the human soul? After you've done everything else, is there still something left that is not materialistic, that is ethereal, that we can't quite put our finger on, that gives us a chance to beat the Terminator in the movie because the human soul is something that it didn't account for, right? Yeah. Is there still something missing? That is possible too. We have to go to the end of the rainbow and just see how far we can go. We can emulate humans, just like you can emulate and describe a visual scene with just text, but it's not enough. It's not the same thing.
Yeah. And it takes us back from Terminator, Hasta La Vista, baby there. Just one last thing I want to hit on, because you hit on it earlier. Is there going to be a need or a skill set of like coding, software development, or does that go away in a sense? And there's a different way we interact with and build technology. Like, where do you see that going? And it may not be like the immediate future, but where do you see that going in a sense?
So you can be a generalist or a specialist. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be either of the two and you want to make a difference, you better be darn good specialist or generalist. For a specialist to be darn good, you'll have to learn how to work with technology rather than against it. That means that you know how to ask better questions than any other human being on the planet about your subject matter of expertise, that you know how to challenge the AI and push it deeper and harder, just like you don't accept your first prompt back from GPT, and you know how to ask the rest, you know how to ask the right questions because you know what a good output looks like. You'll need that as a specialist. And there's going to become a level where the AI gets so smart that only very few human beings know how to challenge it anymore. And so this is where specialists have a future in development, right? The next thing is, and yes, that's the 1% of the 1%. Yeah. And then you have the generalists. And I see this so many times in business. I have the smartest, I have a room full of PhDs working with me, right? They're the smartest people in our field. But ask them like to tie a shoelace and they don't know where to start, or they overanalyze it. So yeah. The generalist is like the MacGyver, right? The person who's so creative and pulling the out of the infinite fabric of the multiverse, they pull all the strings together and imagine what a solution would look like and know how to describe it and use AI to help them create their vision into reality. How many people can't start a startup today, but have great ideas because they don't have funds or time or economic opportunity, whatever. And AI is about to change all that. It's the great equalizer. I think generalist developers are really important because you represent the human race and you represent a vision and an idea. And AI is the master craftsman at your disposal in multiple fields where you can command an, you know, I'll go back to army. You can command an army of skilled craftspeople to create and realize your vision. You want a new house? You know, 100 drones are ready to just stack all the bricks and do everything. Additive manufacturing just before your eyes. You envision it and it's just constructed in front of you. Nobody's homeless. Nobody's hungry. Nobody's lacking basic resources. And the generalist and specialists are going to have a role in that. And then everybody else, it's like League of Legends, right? It's fun until you play ranked. And then you get stomped by Koreans who like run around circles around you and you get really frustrated with your team. If you're just playing League of Legends casually, it's fun. You don't care about like being the best or winning. You just are there to have a good time. The vast majority of developers will be able to just have a good time. But if you still want to make a difference in this AI-enabled future, you better be 1% generalist or 1% specialist to make a difference.
Yeah, it's an interesting way of thinking about it. And your Army reference just took my mind to a weird place. And this is a weird spot to end on, but my wife and I, we watch a bunch of like these like weird cult documentaries on like Netflix. Okay. Is there a cult of the future where a leader is, you know, employing AI agents in a sense versus humans? Like, is that like, that's kind of a weird, it just popped in my head. Is that something that one of those negative kind of effects and scenarios we deal with in the future?
Let's keep it positive, right? Because it's the end of the podcast. I don't know the name of the study, and I can't name the people involved in the study, so I can't credit them. I'm sorry. I am not a vector database with perfect retrieval. I'm a human being. But that's right. I will tell you the concept of it. This was a wonderful study. It was actually done a while ago. And so, you know, at Thanksgiving dinner, the dreaded politics topic, right? Everybody has an opinion. Now, I come from Belgium, tiny country, huge countries around it. We're basically the punching bag of Europe, right? So the only thing you can do is just get along with your neighbors and try for them not to invade you every 2 seconds they can, right? That's like the history of Belgium. So you need to learn how to get along with people. And so let's say you're in Thanksgiving dinner and people have like different political views and stuff. So now, you know, I've been in America for a while to know that can get pretty intense. But when you peel behind, when you peel a little bit behind, just like the orange, and you peel it slightly behind, what do you discover underneath? Everybody wants a more just society. Everybody wants less poverty. Everybody wants more prosperity, more opportunity, more happiness. Everybody wants the same darn things. Yeah. The political debate is not about what we want. It's about how to best get there. See where I'm going with it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So some really smart people did a study when it comes to like one of our top political debate topics, taxation. What is the ideal taxation that maximizes individual liberty, prosperity, social mobility, but also social justice and welfare for the general public? Different political parties are going to put out hypotheses. They're going to then be voted. They then have a chance to implement or complain about their hypothesis, test them out in the market, and then eventually the population can then vote again and then see and reward the good ideas and punish the bad ideas. And so democracy moves forward, right? But that can take 50 years to try everybody's proposal. Okay, some really smart people figured out, what if we can make a simulation of the US economy with all these parameters, and we can just ask the AI the question, boop, 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 find the ideal thing that maximizes everything. Now, the study came back at something astonishing. They found a way to lower the taxes and improve welfare and improve all other categories. So if we had access to such technology in our decision-making and policy-making, we could, in essence, it's like testing medication on a simulation of your body before you have the side effects after taking it. Why should you be the guinea pig? Run a simulation of the economy, run a simulation that includes things like diverse people groups, interests, various backgrounds, economics, social circles, and everything. Take everything, equity, take everything into consideration in these models you can, and then just let the AI run the numbers. And since we all want the best thing for this country, we'd all be in agreement.
Yeah, so, and the concept of running simulation is not anything new, but it's the ability, to that last point, that you can actually realistically feed in all these parameters and actually have it work, right? Spit out something on the back end is the new unlock here.
So yeah, could you use that for totalitarian government purposes? Yes, you could. I mean, you know, I don't like this, and I've already made too many political references, but to me, like, the discussion around AI and access and everything is actually no different than the debate around the Second Amendment. The people that say, well, everybody should have access to AI and powerful AI and so forth, are using the same arguments that people are saying everybody should have access to weapons. I mean, we may not like it, but it's the same darn debate, same arguments. Is it Is it better for everyone to have access because more good people have access to it, meaning so-and-so? Yeah. Or do you give access to the corporations with all the economic power in a country? And then you get to corporatism. It's the same type of debates all over again, but with a new toy, right? And and of course, this toy is way more powerful. I think AI is more dangerous than a gun.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, right?
Yeah.
So it's not, AI use is not enshrined in the United States Constitution, but it is more dangerous than it. And it's less regulated than even guns in this country, despite the Constitution. So, you know, you have a handful of companies who build powerful models who are acting responsibly, but then you have open source models who can do whatever they want. And there's no regulation. There's no framework around it. I do think a society has a duty to its citizens, and we have a duty to each other to have a responsible dialogue. I think that's starting to happen around, you know, what do we want for our future out of this, you know? And then the last thought is just in people like ask this often, how are you going to pay for universal, like generous income instead of basic income? How do you pay for all that? Well, currently a lot of transactions like human to human or human to agent. And with agent, I'm going to include every SaaS platform, Uber Eats, or every platform you're as a human pay money to a piece of software. Okay.
Yeah.
But the real economy of the future is going to be, human to human still going to happen. Just like we still barter and not always use legal tender. We still barter a lot less, but still happens. So human to human interaction and transactions happen still. But the biggest economy of the future and the growth driver of the future GDP is going to be agent-to-agent interactions. And so this is when we talk about that orchestration. Nobody wants to just, like, everybody wants to be paid for their servers and their work, right? So the way that's going to happen is that when these AI agents are interacting, they're going to let each other know what their cost is. And there's an entire economy that's going to happen. But because these agents and AIs work so much faster than humans, there's going to be trillions of transactions for every human transaction. And so this layer of the economy, agent to agent, that's ultimately going to be the majority of the GDP of any country. And that's the layer where you do not need to tax humans anymore. So I see a future where humans are not taxed on their labor and keep all the fruits of their labor 100%, and where the agent-to-agent transactions are facilitating so much economic growth and wealth that they can also provide a universal generous income for the citizens of their sovereign nation. So this is a little bit longer term out. But all the pieces are already in place for this. This is all converging already. It just takes a little bit of time.
Yeah, that's like a whole nother episode right there. The agent to agent, is that, you said there's a transaction there, just philosophically, theoretically thinking through this. Is that happening on behalf of a human, or how is that, does that make sense in terms of what I'm asking? Because you got my wheels turning a bit in terms of how this evolves. Yeah.
Not necessarily. Like, it can be, but it doesn't have to be. Let's say you play Pal World and you're assigning a pal to water the water. It has a watering skill and it needs to grow like berries or something, right? So just assigning the pal to your base and say, go and make berries for me. You already know the economy of that and you know what the output is. It's berries that then your pals can eat. So just assigning the AI agent on your behalf to go be productive in some way, you can say start and stop or reassign. So once you assign it, you give it agency to go do its job. And just like you think human, like it happens all the time. Like we want to sign up for some service. So CFO, hey, issue me a new virtual credit card. Okay, what budget do you need? What is it for? Okay, I approve it. So you can be, as a human, you can be the CFO that controls the budget for your agents, Or you can have an agent CFO and you give a high level budget and say, make sure the budget is allocated fairly between all the other agents and doesn't spend above that. And so agents can either self-regulate their spend, or a human can act as the ultimate gatekeeper for who is allowed to spend what. But the point is, if you deploy an agent to go do an economic productive activity for you, you need to enable it to go and buy, I don't know, a Canva subscription or something, right? And do what it needs to do. And so, and these are going to be very different than the current economy. The current economy is about make like a commitment of $200 a month to sign up for so-and-so. No. That's not the future economy. The future economy of agents to agents is microtransactions. Like $0.0001 for one particular impactful action that I needed to hire you for. All of that is going to happen over the blockchain, probably going to get the Federal Reserve into that because they want to control the money supply and everything. So it will be likely sovereign digital currencies that will be the official legal tender for country interoperability. But there's going to be other forms of transactions. And then just like you go to a website now and I accept Visa and MasterCard, they will be able to announce as well to other agents, I can accept these forms of payments. And then agents have permission to pay in these forms of payments. And then it will just be a blockchain transaction between the two agents of a minuscule amount, tiny transactional, and you're paid instantly. Like, it's not like you even have to have like net 30 terms. You want to get something done, it happens like instantly, and you pay like a tiny amount of money just for that action. So it's all like in supply chain. It's like just in time, JIT, like just in time manufacturing. No huge warehouses, no huge backlog of inventory. No, something comes in and it happens in that moment. You only pay for the single action that you needed help with. And all those transactions are going to amount to trillions and trillions and trillions of transactions, all happening over the blockchain. And it will create so much wealth and prosperity. We can just tax that, tax those transactions with like a tiny VAT, like value added tax, fully. And this is why it would be a good idea to have like a legal tender sort of thing for this, like a digital dollar, not as a forced way, but as a practical way. You need a blockchain type of transaction that can have value added tax attached to it, so you do not have large corporations doing tax evasion, making billions of dollars while the rest of us starve. And so this is a societal contract you make where you say, we want to embrace AI and we want our society to have the benefits of that wealth creation and take care of our population who is now displaced otherwise, so that humans then have time to go and live their life to the fullest. We're not made to sit a cubicle 9 to 5. We're not made for that. Like, let us play Lego with our children. I'd much rather do that. Honestly, I'll like turn my computer off and spend time play with my kids right now. Like, why are we doing this?
And that's what I was about to ask you. Well, how do humans make money in this new future where you have AI agents doing everything? But maybe that's the point around the wealth creation. It's just a different way of thinking about it where you don't necessarily need to be
We solved it a long time ago. It's called parenting and children. And when you're a kid, your parents provide food, shelter, everything you need, and you're happy. And you're happy. And if you want a little bit of extra money, you go babysit or do something. So you want to go on vacation, you go and do some extra economic activity, you go volunteer, go help, you get some extra money and you spend it on stuff that otherwise you can't do. But you can get a job too as a young person. You can go work in McDonald's when you're like 14 years old. You can go work part-time. Like you can, but if you have a great life at home and you can be with your friends and hang out and socialize or play sports, would you still want to go do that? And so what we need to create is a society where you have the freedom to do what you want to do. You want to do more work and get financially ahead and a difference? Go ahead and do it. You want to instead say, I have enough. Like, honestly, like Europe's a lot like that. I mean, you've got people that are like, single income households, and they go to Spain and Ryanair on vacation three times a year. You know, a cleaning lady in the United States where her husband's not working would never be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And there in Europe, they think it's normal. Oh, no, no, no. Yeah. I'm clocking out. It's 5 o'clock. What do you mean? I'm not here to, like, this is not my life. This is my work. It's 5 o'clock. I'm going home. Yeah. Try that in the United States. Would never work. You'd be like, I'm not saying fired, but, you know, performance evaluation against your colleagues would be pretty tough. Mm-hmm. We're a society obsessed with work and obsessed with keeping up with the Joneses, but different lives is possible too. And I'm in favor of capitalism and freedom and free market. I think people just should have the freedom and option to live a more fulfilled life. And like the last example I'll give you is that capitalism is not always rewarding what is most valuable. For example, motherhood. A receptionist makes more money than a mother. I think that's wrong. Economic value is, it should be taken into effect long-term value, not just short-term value. A short-term value of a receptionist is like, I just answered a call, I make money. Long-term value of a mother spending time with her child is a better society, better race children, better society, better fabric, better happiness, more safety for everyone, more prosperity for everyone. Mothers, like, that should be like a paid job to be a mother, or it can be a man too, who's a primary caretaker. Forget about the whole gendered thing. Just think about an economy that we can create together where we create freedom and opportunity and equality for people without forcing them into anything. That's the big flaw in, like, in communism. You have to go punish the hard workers, take from them to give to the other people. Mm-hmm. And in capitalism, the problem is you're taking from the productive, you're not taking care enough of the weak people in society, right? So there's the two extremes. But we now are having this emerging third option, which was never possible before, where the majority of our GDP can be derived from automation, and we are no longer taxing the labor of people. You want to be a great podcast host, is very popular. You want to use, keep everything. You're a human being. You earned it. You deserved it. Go and keep everything. But at the same time, go and take care of every mother and reward them for being a mother. And it's a job. It deserves to be rewarded in society to take care of it.
Yeah. So, and it's those things that make humans truly unique is what's going to stand out and will be, you know, valued in that way. But now, this has been amazing. One of the best conversations I've had to date. So many different angles we went into. But if you want to get ahead of this, like, as a business, this whole concept of AI agents, AI orchestration, tell the audience a little bit about SmithOS. I know you're still in kind of an early, early access mode, but let folks know kind of where you're at and where it's going in the near future.
Right. So, today, if you want to build AI agents, they're either very basic or they require you to have like a hosting environment and figure out APIs and security and encryption and code and all that. We made a platform that makes it very easy for everyone to build agents that are doing this thing with workflows, data, tools, and intelligence. Drag and drop, visual, no code required, although you can add it if you want to. But it's the first platform that from A to Z makes it easy for you to automate things in your business. And you can deploy them right alongside your colleagues in Microsoft Copilot, OpenAI Teams. You can deploy it to your website as a chat if you want to. But calling this a chat is an insult to its potential, but it can do it. You can deploy it as an API to power your no-code front-end mobile app or whatever. You can run in the background and, like, look at new tickets coming in and automating several actions. It's not yet obviously like any AI. It's not yet where I think these autonomous agents will end up being. They get more powerful with this Web3. The stronger the internet becomes, the more powerful the AI models become, the more data you have access to, the stronger your agents become. What we try to do is make something that takes the agent building itself like almost like the easiest part of the whole equation. Figuring out how you make your pancakes, how where you source your ingredients, your data, and what pancake or waffle maker you're using as a tool, yeah. That's where you spend most of your time. Once you know how to use Smith, the rest is just drag and drop and choosing what you want to do and then pushing a button and you're deployed. We're already deploying this today in early access to 100 early adopters. And they have mission statements like, by the end of this year, we will have transformed our entire agency. Every department, every team member is going to have AI coworkers. And wow. They have already deployed in some cases like 12, 13 agents already in the first 2 months of this year. And they're on a journey of AI transformation. I invite everyone who has like good use cases for automation and real tangible benefit that can be passed to your customers and team for growth. I invite everyone to just go to smithos.com and click on early access and let us show you what we've built, see if this is a good fit. And if we can start building that future together. I mean, it will happen. Whether Smith ends up the category leader in the space or not, it doesn't really matter for the purpose of this podcast. I believe we have an early lead. We have been working on this for a year already, way, way, way before others, because, you know, I'm secretly a time traveler from the future.
That answers so many things.
Right? And and so, yeah, if you are excited about this journey and you're truly passionate about these things and want to see where the future is headed, give us a shout out in early access and somebody from our team will talk to you and we'll see if this is a good fit.
Alexander, thanks for being on the podcast. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Built Right. If you enjoy the show, give us a follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to leave us a review. For more info on Built Right, visit us at hatchworksbuiltright.com.
Do you already have a GenAI use case in mind for your business, but don't know where to get started? Hatchworks GenAI Accelerator is exactly what you need. We guide you from ideation to a tangible prototype. Our approach provides a low-risk, high-value pathway for you to validate and test GenAI technology on a small scale before committing to full production. We take you through technology and LLM selection, perform data preparation, and then build the actual prototype. And then we do testing and model fine-tuning of your prototype. The best part is we get you to this prototype in just 2 to 8 weeks based on the scope of your use case. Check out the link in the show notes or visit hatchworks.com to get started today.